Hello, boys and girls, to another edition of the Spotter Pod. For those of you who are returning listeners, not our usual intro where we quote our subject matter because we have a very special spot. What spot number are we at?
Well, we are at spot number 69.
Nice. Yeah, we are super not mature for our age, but what can you do? But no, the real reason why we're doing a special episode like this is because it is the end of 2020 almost. What an interesting year it's been, huh?
Yeah, we're recording this on the eve of the eve, December 30th, as it were.
Yes,
and that so is true. We're about nearly done. You know, time to reflect on what we've done this year, this beautiful, beautiful year.
Since this podcast has still survived somehow, you have made it to our second round of the 2020 Spotty Awards. That's where you that's when you're gonna pipe in the applause and the clapping. No, not your shitty self.
Actual
I'm looking at you right now, and like you know the kid that's saying Chocolate Rain on YouTube?
Yeah, that's Chocolate Rain. Purple Rain's the actual Prince song.
Oh okay, yeah, Chocolate Rain.
Sure. Chocolate Rain.
Kind of look like him right now.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's the curly hair and the glasses. Yeah. And you're not even black.
I mean, I am kind of brown. I feel like I'm browner than you. Maybe, who knows?
Yeah, I would say you are for sure.
Okay, a little more. What's it called? Golden brown and delicious. GBD.
True enough. No truer words have ever been spoken. last week we covered Starrcade 1990. Do you have any lingering thoughts on Starrcade 1990?
Starrcade 1990. No, I think we basically got. I got my point across that. Yeah, surprisingly, not terrible. Because I was a little like early. Because I feel like once Hulkamania kind of ended and that boom period, like the lull between then and the Attitude
the
Era
and Hulkamania. I mean, at Uncensored 96.
I mean, the unholy combination.
The Ultimate Solution and Z Gangster.
You know, I think I know my I know my answer for most boring because that was a slog.
Was it really?
I mean, I remember it being. I mean, how long is that pay per view? It's pretty fucking long.
I think it's only
maybe
3 hours.
Actually, yeah, I guess you don't really get into the 4 hour plus until, like you know, modern day. Yeah, the 7 hours of WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. But hey, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, yeah, Starrcade 90 for me, I enjoyed it. Yeah. Honestly, the reason why we went to watch it was just because there was a little story about the Black Scorpion and it being, oh, it's Ric Flair. And we got to that point and we were like, yep, it's definitely Ric Flair, but no, an enjoyable pay-per-view for both old school fans and possibly fans of the newer generation.
Yeah. But enough about that, because apparently that episode doesn't count as part of our... He didn't... Is there a reason you didn't put it in consideration for... what do you call it? Our awards right now?
Oh, well... No, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I put it... Oh,
dang. In any of these
like,
categories, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like,
actually,
I
really like the description. Yeah. You know what? I'll plug the description that I put later on when we get told. I think it's pretty good.
So, I'm sure it is. Okay, so for those of you who haven't heard our previous Spotty Awards, this is how it normally works. So, I've heard some podcasts, like Super Best Friends, when it used to exist, they would do like a top, I don't know, 10 list or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is kind of like a spin on the Razzies, but it's more of us summarizing the subject matters that we found interesting or great or shitty or bland. That's essentially what these awards are. So, Ophie and I will go back and forth with what parts that are considering to us, and we'll just go from there, just like last year. Anything else you have to add to that?
Anything else? No, I think we're ready to get started. I'm going to start with me then with this, assuming is going to be description. Yeah, so if you guys don't know, if you somehow are listening to this without being able to read what I put there, every episode I put some dumb shit down.
It's the best. It's one of the highlights of this podcast, to be honest.
You know, I'm really glad to hear that because, you know, sometimes I'm just like, I have no idea what to put here. You know, like sometimes I try to be funny, sometimes I just give up, and well, depending on the subject matter. But you know, some of these descriptions I think are better than others. And now I got a couple choice cuts really, so I think for me, the front runner is probably Kazam. Which, if you guys don't know, Kazam starring the wonderful, the beautiful, the tallest. Actually, he's not that tall. You know, he's not that tallest.
What? Like, I mean, he's not the tallest, but isn't he like some?
The most dominating force in NBA history, Shaquille O'Neal, and his. Maybe acting debut, I think, in as a genie.
Was this before? Well, yeah, it's definitely his first movie as a genie. I can agree to that. But
oh,
if this was first or Steel?
Oh, do we do it? I don't know.
I think this was first, actually. I think Kazam was first.
Maybe, but hey, playing on that and using my knowledge of the basketball, so Kazam, not very highly regarded. And, you know, as I mean, I have a soft spot for it because I love Shaq. He's one of my favorite players.
There's a dunking scene.
There's a dunking scene. He dunks the bad guy like a man. He turns him into a ball with his magic and dunks him as he did back in the day. He actually had some Shaq shoes. And I didn't even know. I didn't know at the time, but apparently, like, his shoes were specifically, like, I don't want to say, well, they were cheaper, but they were, like, targeted towards, like, lower income kids, and I'm like, oh yeah, huh, that makes sense.
Do you remember how much kinda, they were?
Oh no, but they're probably like, probably not as much as like, you know, Jordans or other basketball players' shoes. You're pretty good, but anyway, he also played for the Orlando Magic, so I decided to go, and he's a rapper, multi-talented, facets, not, there's, right. there's plenty of different faces to this 7-footer. Lots of area to lots of real estate, if you know what I mean. But anyway, where is the fucking quote? Oh God, where is it? Totally professional here.
Yeah,
ah, fuck. Where'd it go? Where the fuck is Kazam? Oh yeah. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
So as okay, description. Is he a genie because he played for the Orlando Magic, just like the team in the 1995 NBA Finals? The result was tragic. Yeah, Kazam was at least for me, I think it does fall into the so bad it's good category. But I think I might be biased because I am a fan of basketball, fan of Shaq. So I just find him an entertaining person to watch. Everything else is kind of shit. It's terrible. That main kid actor is, his character is god awful. It's so bad. He's so insufferable.
All I'm saying is it might have improved the quality of the movie if the kid died at the end. I'm just saying, there's a chance.
Oh, God, yeah. But anyway, that one's pretty good. World God Only Knows, too, actually, which I do have another category. Well, maybe, oh, you know what? Let's use the space to talk about it now. So it is an anime that I've always kind of heard about. In back of my mind, I kind of got the general gist of it. He plays the Galgay. He plays the dating sims, but he doesn't know how to react to girls in real life, and now he's got to do it. And there was like a really nice quote. Like, that series is just full of small little details that you could pick up. And it was the one at the end where, you know, he's giving a spiel about, you know, why it's all right to love 2D over 3D, as it were. As is the phrase being known. So I made a variation on that.
Look, all I'm saying is 2D girls don't age. Just let that little nugget of knowledge stay in your brain really quick.
Yeah, I mean, can't argue with that. But hey, you know what? Just as 2D girls don't age, you know what also doesn't age is podcasts. Oh, I guess we're aging now. This is kind of our 2-year anniversary-ish. Eh.
Woo!
But hey, no, I wrote the, yeah, these podcasts are pixels, data. I know that. So how would you describe the podcast you like? Good production value? Interesting discussions? A pointless argument. What's important is that there's love. Isn't that what you people always say? So, obviously, you know, the great Katsuragi Kama, you know, god of gaming or just anything. Does she ever say, like, yeah, he's the god of something? Or is he?
God of conquest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the phrase. That's the phrase. Yeah. That one's pretty good, but you know what else? Maybe I should have done the Digimon movie right after Kazam, because it's also that, a very
category
of two digi dudes with digi dudes prove their digi generacy by being two huge digi dorks about the digi movie. Now, yeah, as we proved, if you listen to that, we're two huge. Big Digimon marks. Like, we fucking love Digimon. And, yeah, the movie, like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's probably bad, but, like, I can't hate it. Like, come on.
I think, honestly, the second segment is good. I think the second segment's pretty good. The third one's a jumbled mess. The first one, I feel like it's nice to have, but I don't even think it needs to be there.
It's pretty quick. It's like an appetizer.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like they one of those Pixar shorts at the end.
All together.
They really do, yeah. And I think the favorite thing I learned about that actually was the fact that, yeah, Saban Entertainment, the makers of Power Rangers, dubbed Digimon to America. So, like, wow, that makes complete sense. Because that's basically what Power Rangers. That is, and that's basically how Power Rangers comes about, is taking a bunch of Super Sentai footage and mashing it all together to try to make a coherent story. Some of them are better than others.
There's a part of me that wants to watch back and see, like, how much you pay attention to it. Like, if it actually makes sense, you know? As opposed to when you're a snot-nosed kid and you're just like, oh, they're doing the jump kick. And then they're doing the blade slice when they put the blade on you.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
It's not a cut. It's like a saw almost, right? It's like a saw.
I mean, I'm down for Power Rangers, but I don't know if...
That shit's too long, so I don't know.
Yeah, probably. But anyway, I think I'll have one more. Oh, yeah, the Starcade 1990. Because I don't know if they've ever done it again. Is Starcade Facts, like, an established part of Starcade?
I don't know. I mean, when we watched Starcade 93, I don't think they did that. So, I'm assuming it was around this time that they did it. I don't know if they did it the following or prior year.
Anyway, but I was kind of scratching my head last time. Also, I don't
see the description for this one now that I'm thinking about
it. I'll put it in the thing, just so you can read it along.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh, yeah. Yeah, go read it.
Starcade stats. Ophi the big O-O. Height, 5'6", totally. I'm totally not 5'5", point, you know, 4'5", or whatever. weight, yeah, 250. I gotta... Hometown Sin City, USA. Start ninth in the world. Favorite offensive weapon is the dichotomy of man. His father is a hospice nurse. That's pretty good. I'm really proud of this one.
The dichotomy of man.
The more I look at this,
actually the worst.
The more I look at this, the more I think this might win. I don't know. This is pretty good.
Yeah, okay, so out of these choices, what would you say is your favorite description from this year?
You know what? Because the World God Only Knows one, a lot of times I do just take a quote and try to change it around to fit our podcast. And I do enjoy those. But, you know, I think maybe the Kazam one, you know, flexes my creativity a bit more, you know. The Digimon one, it was also in that vein. You know what? You know, I think.
I think
I'm gonna maybe I'm an upset. I love how I'm choosing between like two movies that are objectively fucking terrible.
Hold on now. One of those is not objectively terrible. Maybe it's subjectively terrible.
No, dude, it's bad. No, come on, it's bad. No, dude, it's not good. But you know what? I think I'll give it to
I'll give it to the Digimon over. Digimon wins. Digimon's always going to win.
Hey, Debbie, I've actually been watching. I've been keeping up with the new season, too.
Oh, dude, I'm behind. I'm only like a few episodes.
That shit goes. Like, yeah. they don't slow down. They're like,
well, they're probably only within 26 episode season, right?
No. So
they got to get their shit in.
Got to get their, like, we're getting Megas, like, ooh, soon.
2 episodes in.
Well, yeah, kind of. So, yeah, no, I think I'll give it to Digimon just because it was the string of...
The Digirap?
Just aping out the Digirap.
Degeneracy?
Degeneracy with the Digidudes and the...
Well, I'm going to baton pass to myself and more of a pass, rather a pass, more of a...
The Mr. Perfect throw-in to yourself?
Yeah.
The football?
Oh, shit, that's a pretty good one. Yeah. Baton pass yourself and then run around the whole track and then...
Oh, yeah, no, do it three. Brilliant. How many? Do it like what? 4 times? That's how many people are in a real.
Well, I'm definitely not gonna run around a track 4 times. So I'll tell you what, it's not gonna be that.
All right.
But moving on, since it's my turn, so we have some contestants for my favorite intro. So as Ophi handles the descriptions, my side is handling the intros. Not that we designed it that way; it just happened to be like that, which. This is great. I like that dynamic, by the way. But let's run through some of these choices. So first one for me is Shane, which we covered at the very beginning of the year, right after the SpongeBob SquarePants episode. And a quick summary, or TLDR rather, Shane is just a cowboy movie about an outlaw who tried to escape his past, and he ended up getting into trouble again. And my favorite, the intro I did, when I normally do my intros, it's kind of like to epitomize the subject matter, whether it's more of a comedic or a more serious tone, or maybe we watch something that was like a gag, like Kazam, so I'll do more of a gag-type intro. For Shane, it was more of a, I would say, a serious film. So the quote I went with was, I think it would be iconic for the movie, is when... Shane is telling the little kid that there's no more guns in the valley, and he rides off into the sunset.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely one of the a poignant moment that kind of crystallizes everything about the movie. And as always, I try my best to follow up, and I remember distinctly exactly what I said when you finish your quote.
Shane! Shane, come back, Shane! Shane, come back! No, Shane!
It makes sense. It's not only in the aspect that it's a child, you know, to react like that, but also because that character, as in that child, also talked a shit ton of that movie. So obviously, when his hero leaves town, he's gonna talk a shit ton too.
Yeah, it's very, very distraught, you know. But yeah, I just remember making that.
Next in line, in contention for my favorite intro, is King of the Ring 94. And for those of you who don't know, it's the King of the Ring where Owen Hart won the tournament, and he declared himself the King of Hearts. Mm-hmm. And the quote that I used there is, he was essentially just giving himself the verbal hand job and saying, I did it, it's me, I did it, Dad, I did it, Brett. He's just rubbing it in on everyone's face because the whole Owen and Brett rivalry was really big that year. And honestly, I think that promo is my favorite King of the Ring promo. And I know for some people that's kind of crazy because Austin wins King of the Ring. And obviously Austin 316 is one of the most iconic promos of all time. But I think just because I'm such a fan of Owen Hart, it's really, I think it really showcased what are the good points of Owen in his career. You know, it highlighted them.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, I've kind of seen some sprinklings of that feud. Like, that just every, like, the storyline is just fucking amazing, like, masterful. And the matches themselves are also up to that standard because, you know, two brothers wrestling each other for their whole lives and then, you know, putting on, you know, great match after great match. Like, what's the Steel Cage match? Was that a Mania or was it the, whatever, you know,
Steel
you
know
Cage.
The one. I know what you're talking about. I think Steel Cage was SummerSlam, if I remember correctly.
But yeah, like multiple times, like the tension, because it's like, you know, back at, I think wrestling, one of the best things it does is kind of, you know, blur the lines between reality and fiction. And I think, you know, the whole adage of the best characters, I'm pretty sure this is from Stone Cold himself, saying the best characters are the ones where it's like you, but turned up to like 11.
I've heard that.
Yeah, so, I think putting in, I'm sure some part of Owen like really felt like, I mean, obviously Brett was the bigger star and had more success overall, and so, you know, definitely I could feel as a the little brother looking up to his big, as they say. Nah, I think it told a very compelling story, and you know that little King of the Ring win and declaring himself the King of Hearts. One, that's a great name.
Oh, man,
that's such a perfect name.
So fucking good, dude.
And two. Oh, wait, actually, didn't Brett win King of the Ring like a year ago, though? I was going to say, oh, he did something Brett didn't do, but I think Brett did.
Yeah. Well, I think, if anything, that added to it.
Oh, yeah, you know, anything you could Brett do, did. Anything yes, you could do, exactly. I could do better, which is, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
A classic part of sibling rivalry, so, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't even have an older brother, of course, but I think this is just a storyline that a lot of people could relate to. Like, even let's say you're not necessarily someone's younger brother, but just being that that cocky younger brother doing whatever it takes to overcome your older counterpart, you know, that's something that people can get behind. And although he was not necessarily, even though he was the heel in this storyline, it still made him entertaining and endearing to watch. So I thought that was the brilliance behind it. And also, he just had so much personality, you know, so you couldn't,
yeah,
you couldn't just not love Owen Hart.
Yeah, definitely you could tell, like, they're brothers, but, like, he's very distinct from Brett. Like, he has his own character, you know, makes it all better. Makes it all work.
Okay, so...
Speaking of two dynamic duos, from Brett and Owen to Batman and Robin.
Actually, I'm gonna correct you there. Not Batman and Robin, but Poison Ivy and Bane.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was the intro. Truest duo. No, I remember the intro now.
Yeah, I bet you remember now. I'm like, so, okay, Batman and... So, like I said earlier, the point of these introductions, it's to epitomize the subject matter. So, you know, just because we hate ourselves, one time we did a spot on Batman and Robin, which... You know, it's when you were saying objectively bad movies, I think this is in the category of objectively bad movies. I wouldn't say Digimon is, you know.
No, it's objectively bad. I will fight you, dude. That's not good. It's not good.
It is a step. It's... I didn't say it was good.
A step above Batman and Robin? I don't know. I really think about that.
Oh, no. I think the movie at least has something more endearing than fucking the Batman.
And not if you don't care. Okay, if we go from like people with no prior knowledge to Digimon, they will not give a single fuck about any of those people. I can guarantee you. We are blind to that. People who don't like or actively dislike Digimon, which, okay, well, that's a loss. They dislike it. But they don't know. They don't care. They won't care. I don't know. It's the same tier. I'm sorry.
We're going to have to agree to disagree, but continuing on from that, yeah, this is definitely a gag movie. So the quote there was, in no certain words, Poison Ivy is assaulting someone, and she's saying, oh, that, or before she gets her ass beat, she said, that's why every Poison Ivy action figure comes with him. And then she motions to Bane, just kicking the shit out of dudes with his balloon-sized muscles, but... I don't know, they broke the fourth wall there, and look, there's superhero movies like Deadpool, or let's not even say superhero movies, let's say there's movies in general that'll break the fourth wall, and I, you know, it could be charming, right, and entertaining, but when they did it in this movie, I was just like, I don't know, yeah. I wouldn't say I was entertained by it necessarily, I was just more caught off guard by it.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of on the fence because people, you can have an action figure of a real life person, you know. I know it's a wink, it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to, you know, oh, we're superheroes and obviously very big in the toy industry, but okay, it's in the category, I guess. It's fringe, but I see what you're saying. That whole movie is
a fever dream.
I mean, I will say I enjoy Digimon movie, like in terms of enjoyment watching. Like, Digimon movie is, like, higher than Batman and Robin. Or wait. Little Panda Fighter.
Or, oh, man.
Or, actually, I don't know. Little Panda Fighter is crazy.
Okay, dude. I don't even think you... Look. When you said that, you couldn't get, like, someone that knows nothing about Digimon to watch it. And they wouldn't enjoy, they wouldn't really get anything from it. I can probably agree with that. But you can't tell me you could just take someone from the general public, have them to sit down and watch Little Panda Fighter and not be bored throughout the whole, there's no way they wouldn't want to turn it off.
I
fucking wanted to turn it off.
See, I think that's where we differ. I don't think Panda Fighter is boring. I think it's actually batshit crazy, insane. It's a crazy, like, 20 minutes. Thank God it's only 20 minutes.
Oh, you're gonna change? It's longer than that.
Is it?
It was way longer than that.
Oh, I think it's 45 actually.
If it was 20 minutes, I wouldn't hate it as much.
Actually, yeah, I think it's like 45
actually,
minutes.
I'm gonna throw in a surprise.
Oh, 50 minutes.
A surprise run in.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Batman and Robin, yeah, it's not great. Your intro is. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it either, because I'm like, yeah, it's. He's in action because he's a cartoon. It's cartoons. It's a cartoon.
Like, it wasn't cool. It wasn't even, like, that funny. And then it was just, it was kind of lame, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty lame. But you know what wasn't lame? Oh, no, you can go. No, I was going to jump in the jet gun.
My bad.
You can finish.
Didn't mean to cut you off, man. Didn't mean to cut you off, brother. But the last intro I'd like to touch on for my favorite intro was WCW Uncensored 96, like we mentioned earlier. So honestly, like, it wasn't one of my favorite old school pay-per-views I watched. That's for sure. And you know, the reason we watched it was because of the
certain character name who might not be,
which we will not mention again in this podcast for the next 5 minutes at least. I hope.
We'll put a timer on it. The second timer is off. Oh, gotta mention him.
the reason why this is one of my favorite intros is because during that Alliance to End Hulkamania versus the Mega Powers match, you just heard the commentators, like, really just selling what a great spectacle the Tower of Doom match is. And, you know, I'm not... To be honest with you, the Tower of the Doom match, it's pretty bad. It's not good.
It is. And, yeah, maybe I'll talk about...
And the quote, you know, the intro quote is just them... you know, it's them putting it over like,
this is the greatest
sporting event, and I'm gonna try to paraphrase it here. Greatest sporting event in our, I'm not gonna say which commentator did this, by the way.
Oh, you don't,
Tony Schiavone.
No, I was gonna say, like, who yeah, it's fucking Tony Schiavone. Who the
Tony. I love you, Tony Schiavone. But you know, doing his job, he's saying this is the greatest sporting event than the Major League, the World Cup, the Super Bowl, and. You know, they're trying, and in my head, I'm like, oh, this isn't even...
I think the one that got me the most is, I think it might be Tony Schiavone once again, saying this is...
Bobby.
This is, this is the greatest, commentating, this is the greatest achievement in our careers. It's like...
Yeah, I think that was Bobby. There's no way that motherfucker was lying through his teeth at that moment. He was probably like, fuck this.
I mean... Yeah, and saying it to fucking take the piss. Like, oh, you know, so fucking glad I get to commentate that. Yeah.
Okay. Let's all right, but pick it's time a winner. To give out my spotty for my favorite intro. And I think I'm going to go with King of the Ring 94 just because of what that match meant. Yeah. And it's probably not even one of Owen's best matches. It's still a good match, but, like, I think the storyline and meaning behind it is what sells it for me.
Yeah. I think it's probably... I guess Shane's also more serious side. Batman and Robin and WCW Uncensored are a little more on the comical, I would think.
Oh, you think Batman and Robin wasn't as serious in tone as Shane?
I mean, they both star... men who do action scenes and
All right.
Fight so people.
We're going to talk. Going to pass the ball to Opie. We're going to cover his favorite spot of the year.
My favorite spot of the year, or my favorite. Because I guess that would be about reviewing the actual episodes. And I mean, I don't think of.
Favorite subject matter.
Yeah, sure. So I think my favorite, and maybe it is because I went around on my birthday when we did this episode, and it was also the last like big event I did before, you know, 2020 kind of took a massive turn for the world, downturn. But now I'm putting the SpongeBob
just the drizzling shit,
just a tiny bit, kind of like what the characters experience, maybe, perhaps in the SpongeBob musical.
That's true. They almost all die.
They get super panicked about a giant colossal event that's happening.
What a timely musical in our COVID
era. Although maybe some people should be a little more concerned than others, or than at all. You know, could stand to be a little more cautious, but you know, that's the world we live in. That's the
look. All I'm saying is that SpongeBob the musical predicted the COVID pandemic and how to and forecast how to deal with it. So if we just got together and started singing
best day ever. Best day ever.
Yep. If we all got together and held hands within 6 feet without mask and sang best day ever, I'm sure this would all go away.
Oh no, God. Actually, didn't Steven Hillenburg die this year too? Was it this year or last year?
I think
it was this year. Oh, God, doesn't it feel like that was so long ago? I have to think.
COVID kind
of. Yeah, I feel like I'm a lot of the times at the end of the year, I'm usually. Oh, 2018. Oh, shit, it was 2 years ago. Okay. Well, I stand corrected. But no, yeah, SpongeBob musical, I think, and I could probably also put in surprising too, but I got a couple other picks because, I mean, I came in thinking, you know, it's probably going to be good. You know, I expect it to be pretty good, but like, it fucking blew me away. Like, oh my God, like it tells a great story, character development that you've never really seen. It's maybe comparable to what he does in the movie. I kind of pointed out the similarity, so it's kind of a coming of age story. But no, like, fucking fantastic vocal performances all around. I mean, the show is on Broadway, so you know they got some good talent up on there. You know, simple sponge, just a simple sponge makes me cry. I don't want to sing it.
Just a simple sponge is a hit from that one.
Holy shit! Sure. Plankton's rap song, which I think did your version have his like rap god section when he just like goes ape?
Oh no, it's either that or I found a clip of it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it was great. Squidward fucking fighting through depression through the power of music.
Hey,
and succeeding?
You know, I'm sure it works sometimes.
Because, no, it's blew me away. Fan fucking tastic. I know. It's SpongeBob, and you wouldn't expect it to be good, but trust me. Because I've told other people, I'm like, hey, yeah, check out the SpongeBob musical, and they're like that can't
never
be good.
Checked it out?
They can't because it's SpongeBob.
Tell them it's on Broadway though.
I know it's crazy.
People, once you know, I think once it has that Broadway dust, you know, it kind of sets the stage for like how high quality and
it's as if it's like that ties into SpongeBob's problem. Like, oh, he's just a cartoon character. He can't be anything more, dude. I love it. I love it.
Meta as hell.
I fucking love it.
Is the Shrek musical on Broadway?
I think I made it there. Maybe I know there was a Spider-Man one, Afraid of the Dark or whatever. Turn off the light.
Turn off the light. Afraid of the Dark.
Something like that.
I don't even know if I want to see the Spider-Man musical.
I heard it was kind of eh. Because, you know, I know you said, yeah, it's got the Broadway dust. And not everything on Broadway is gold, you know. But it does mean that, hey, someone thought it was good enough to put up there. So, turn off the dark.
Damn it.
What? Turn off the dark? I was, like, skirting around it.
That doesn't even make any sense. Because no, because darkness is just the absence of light.
I know,
so
but
anything
but,
you would turn off light.
No, but you see, Spider-Man is bending reality because he's the hero. He's turning off the dark. Sure. He's the light.
Yeah. Oh. So they're turning off his light.
Because it's a symbol of the because he's the dichotomy, man.
Oh. The dichotomy.
It's all of it.
Dude. Okay, come on. That's Stargate description.
Yeah, and I thought about putting it up there. I thought about, you know what? Excuse me. I made a mistake. I really wanted to put it to Stargate.
No,
no. Hey. If Steve Harvey could do it, why can't I?
Fuck Steve Harvey.
Yeah, I remember why you said that before, and I don't know if you want to reiterate it, but yeah, no, he's great. Okay. So yeah, retroactively, yeah, Digimon movie, give that back. The Starcade, that one's great. I love it. Anyway, all right.
So might be also that that new bias, you know, when there's new
maybe
content,
yeah, recency bias.
I think the dichotomy of man is the bullshit that sells it for me.
Yeah, because it sells my offense, my offensive weapon. Yeah, it's great. See,
you mean your signature maneuver?
My CIA one.
But all right. So my favorite Spotty of the year, or the Spotty for my favorite of the year, goes to Spider-Man PS4, which did not come out this year, but we covered this year, or rather, Ophi finally got around to playing it. Much so, but no, what I really enjoyed about it is because the story of Peter Parker is not, obviously everyone throws around the word relatable, and it's true, that's the reason why they say it, but just seeing it is endearing, and it makes you invested into that story, you know, playing the going through the journey that Peter Parker goes through in this game. And obviously the gameplay is fun and the graphics are stellar and the characters are interesting, but there's a lot of aspects of this game that came together to make it a complete package.
Yeah, no, definitely once I got my hands on it for the first time and I was moving around, I'm like, oh god, I've made a massive mistake by ignoring you and not playing this sooner, because holy shit, I fucking love this game. Like, I was thinking, like, this is the best game on the PS4. Even more so than
I don't know if I can argue with it. You know, I don't think that's quite the insane, bold statement that some may think it is.
Yeah. So, bullshit. Yeah, no. And the old cliche with all these reviews, you know, it makes you feel like Spider-Man, like, in various aspects. But no, yeah, no, I think it's an original story that can totally stand on its own. You know, it just happens to also be tied to amazing gameplay. Spectacular gameplay. Ultimate gameplay. Okay, whatever.
No, but honestly, like, it makes me wish this was the Peter Parker that you saw in the movies. You know? Just the more seasoned veteran Spider-Man. And I think what Insomniac does with this story, too, like, they're actually willing to cover heavy content. And I remember when they killed Aunt May in the comic books, you know, they did some like, oh, and I guess it's possible within the comic book universe because everything's bullshit and the rules don't matter, but they killed Aunt May, and then because of some voodoo,
Mephisto,
Mephisto. She comes back to life, but sacrificed something, blah, blah, blah. But no, I think what's so gutsy and bold about Insomniac's iteration of Spider-Man here is that they're willing to let Aunt May die, where Peter can't save everyone, even the ones especially close to him. And you feel that pain, and honestly, the voice acting from all the characters, but especially the main character and Yuri Lowenthal, where you could feel the pain, you could feel his sorrow and suffering there. And obviously, this game wouldn't be fun if the gameplay was the shits, but since it's high tier, and it's responsive, and there's a lot of Spider-Man, little Spider-Man folklore and nods as far as the backpacks. There's a lot of stuff for people who aren't fans of Spider-Man, and there's even more aspects to enjoy for people who are fans of Spider-Man. Yeah. And I think that's just what's so great about this game. And also, a lot of the other, not just Yuri Lowenthal, but the other supporting cast members or else look great at their job. But oh man, you know, and not even just in the scene where Aunt May passes away was that tragic, but like when Peter got his ass beat by the Sinister Six, and then he's like groaning in pain. I'm like, whoa, that, like that sounds legitimate. Like it caught me off guard.
He actually fucking punched Ari Lundell in the fucking stomach.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, are they stabbing this fucker in the recording booth? What's going on? No, one of my favorite games on the actually no, I would agree with you, at least in the sense that it's my favorite game on the PS4, and I'm so glad that we were able to cover it for our Spotties, and it is my favorite Spotty of the year.
All right. That's great. Well, it wasn't great. I know we already talked. I already kind of talked about the Uncensored 96 main event, so maybe I should find another one. What was kind of boring?
No, let's get more into it. Let's get even more.
Sure, okay. Why not? So Uncensored 96. Okay, I feel like
because I think overall the pay per view.
Yeah, the pay per view itself wasn't complete.
It's actually not too bad. It's just. That really match too though was a little off the rails.
Oh,
to be honest,
the Sting Booker T in the Road Warriors, that one.
Yeah. Oh my god.
The Chicago street fight. Which why is it? What's how makes it different from a normal street fight?
Because it's in Chicago.
They're not. They're not. But they're in Mississippi.
You're in Mississippi.
Oh, I guess I am. No, but yeah, the rest of it, the rest of the cards like middling to good. You know, there are a couple good matches.
I'd agree with you.
Yeah. But yeah, this main event, it's just a fucking clusterfuck. Like, it's 25 minutes.
Can you explain the storyline here? The two teams, and how does this match end exactly?
Yeah, so you have the two teams. As we said, the Alliance and Hulkamania. So it starts out with Horsemen and the Dungeon of Doom, one of the greatest stables of all time, joining forces.
Yeah, the Four Horsemen.
Four.
I ain't even playing with you.
That's a weird way to say Kevin Sullivan and fucking what's the guy? They had like the Dungeon of Doom's like head dude was it some fat dude in a paint? I forget if he had a name. I don't think he wrestled. That was probably a person that is a you know important.
Well, I'm assuming it was a person and not a robot. But hey, remember when the Zodiac was in the dungeon?
That's very important to know because I'll get to it there. They started the Alliance and Hulkamania, but they decided they needed to bring in some ringers because after losing a bunch to Hulk and Randy Savage.
I mean, they needed to. Sense, right?
It does.
Hogan and Randy Savage are kicking people's ass.
Sure, two of the biggest stars. Yeah, two of the biggest stars of the 80s. You know, even though it's the 90s now, but you know, still got something left in the tank. We got to bring in some dudes, so we bring in the man formerly known as Zeus, Z Gangsta. This is so like Z Gangsta, like Z, like you know,
he's French, like a knockoff French accent,
yeah,
a gangsta,
and Mr. Robert Alexander Swenson Jr.,
otherwise known as
a big white man calling himself the Ultimate Solution.
Now, to be fair, I don't think it was his decision to go with the name Ultimate Solution, right?
I certainly hope not, but.
If you're as searching as we are on whose idea the Ultimate Solution was and why it was changed from the final solution, please direct your question tweets to ebischoff.
God, so they bring in these two guys and they have a, what's it called? What's the match called? The Doomsday Cage Match, which, you know, the actual cage itself.
Not the Tower of Doom? Oh, God.
I don't know. I don't know. That's what it says on Wikipedia. Maybe it's a synonym.
No, it's probably the Doomsday Cage.
But, and so the rules, what are the rules? You think, okay, so standard cage match, you want to get out. But then Hulk and Macho get out, like, 10 minutes in, and there's 20 minutes of wrestling left, and I'm like, God.
I think when they were explaining in the beginning, they were like, regular rules apply as far as pinfall and submission. But then I think they also mentioned something about you can escape the cage to win, which throughout the match, if you watch that main event, there are multiple opportunities when they're outside the cage and they could just, you know, run the fuck away so and win the match that way. But that's not exactly how that match goes.
Okay, so I think it's, yeah, Tower of Doom is just like another name for it, I think. So you're not completely wrong. But yeah, no, it's just very unclear, even though they start out at the top. And I will say, the cage does look pretty cool. Kind of like the...
Probably a bitch to stand in.
Probably fucking is. Because they don't have any actual things on the floor. Yeah, it's just more cage.
It's a cage to hold up these 200-plus pound men's frame. But
yeah, no, it's basically the triple cage from Ready to Rumble. Another Spotter Pod classic.
Yeah, there's a reason why that won most hated spot for me last year.
I think it did for me too. But anyway, yeah, no, I think it's just the pay-per-view is pretty long. And look, the main event should probably be one of the longest matches, you know, longer, give it time. But no, I just remember being so fucking tired at this point. Like, oh my God, I am just... And then it ends with fucking, what, I think... formerly Zodiac, but now he's the Booty Man. Booty Man won.
Is he the Booty Man here? Is he the Booty Man?
I think he was. Wasn't he on the card? He was on the card. He beat DDP.
Oh, he was the Booty Man.
And he came coming in with the save, giving the faces of frying pans. And they fry pan it up. They fry him up.
World's smallest frying pan, dude. Like, it was like the diameter of a cell phone, maybe.
And then I distinctly remember, like, they start to leave the cage, but then Macho like looks back into the ring, and then Flair is on his back, and then he pins Flair, and then they win. But I'm like, but weren't you guys escaping the cage? But you guys escaped the cage like 20 minutes earlier. But
you have to let Flair know you pinned him, even though there were seven other guys that were going to beat your ass in that moment.
I mean, hey, you can't. Hey, Z Gangster and Ultimate Solution are they are not taking the pin. That was in their contract.
No, see the. Well, Craig disconnected for me, but we have a backup recording.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's all right. Oh, it keeps going in and out, just cool, like Craig. Hulk Hogan and Macho Man. In this match. No, but you know the crazy thing is that they were hyping up Z Gangster and the Ultimate Solution so much throughout the night. But then when it was time for the actual match, it's probably really shitty to record a great match, but even more shitty to record a Tower of Doom match. But B, they were at the bottom of the cage, so they barely got any screen.
Yeah, I just remember, yeah, they didn't have formal intros. Like, they came in midway through the match and just... Okay. Also, maybe they just couldn't be bothered to do 25 minutes. Yeah. But you could be
bothered. Honestly, like, what? You come up to them like, hey, can you stand at the bottom of the cage for 25 minutes with your...
No, they need to... They need to make their own entrance without any fanfare. I don't even know if they had any music.
You know, I think they were trying to hype up, like, where are they? Where will they show up? And I guess they showed up, and like... You know, like, at least a close-up for the audience at home to get a good look of these guys, but... They tried telling a story about Luger, maybe...
Oh, yeah!
...on purpose, maybe not, which was kind of cool, but...
Yeah.
That kind of got lost in the clusterfuck that was the Tower of Doom match.
Okay, I'm looking at this card, like, oh my god, yeah, you had the giant beating Loch Ness in, like, 2 minutes, remember that? That was great.
Oh my god, I remember that. I think Loch Ness was harassing one of the interviewers, if I remember.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He had a great. I want to say, probably Gene Okerlund. I think he was doing a lot of the interview work back then. Maybe that was a time.
Maybe not some of your favorite matches on there.
It's definitely airing to the side of bad, Uncensored 96. Wouldn't call it a slam dunk.
That Fit Finlay and Steven Regal match, I remember, was fucking hard hitting.
Yeah. I also remember the crowd didn't give a shit.
Hey, I gave a shit. And
I did too. I fucking love William Regal. And I fucking learned that he keeps reptiles too.
Oh, does he?
He's like...
Does that put him more in your camp for you?
He's my boy. That's it. He's in there. He's great. Every match I've seen of his. Maybe one day we'll trade snakes. We'll give each other tips on Tegus.
Oh, I just heard that as give each other tips. I was like, oh, okay.
Hey, 16.
Wait, did you ever hear about that match he had with Bill Goldberg?
Yeah, dude. I actually saw. I watched it, the whole thing. I watched it like 2 minutes, all two, yeah, 3 minutes. I mean, I know the big thing is, he tried to fucking bury Bill by exposing. Also, I just called him Bill. That's weird. He tried to expose Goldberg. I mean, I thought it told a pretty, you know, the story of you have the more technically experienced. I like how they brought up. Yeah, Goldberg is dominant, but he's still kind of new on the scene. And I thought it made sense. Yeah, he had to, you know, struggle with the more map based wrestling stuff, but eventually he gets a dominant win. Oh,
I dig it. All right. Well, if you're done with Uncensored 96. Let's talk about my choices for boring spot of the year. So, contestants are, but starting off with Neo Yokio. So, Neo Yokio is it an anime?
It's
anime inspired for sure.
I mean, is The Last Airbender anime? Are we calling that anime? I don't know.
Maybe.
Because, you know, you can say the same thing. They're both inspired by anime a lot. You can tell.
I guess I'm just feeling different by it because one's shitty, one's great. So I guess that's a...
Wow, you really think it's shitty? Wow, you really think The Last Airbender is shitty? That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's totally what I meant.
That's a hot take.
Fucking jack off.
Till the Fire Nation attacked.
You fucking jock ass!
Jock ass. Yeah,
Neo Yokio is an anime-inspired creation, I guess is the way.
We don't want to call it a cartoon / anime. It's not even anime series.
Yeah,
it's
just cartoon / anime-inspired, whatever. But it was made. It features Jaden Smith, and then it's about. It's about a guy with too much money and some weird version of New York / Tokyo, and he has a butler, I guess. And I don't know. I guess it was meant to be a satire, but they didn't commit to that aspect. And honestly, it just wasn't entertaining. It was more annoying than anything.
Yeah, I think for me, at least, why I'd put it as hated versus boring. Like, I just kept going, like, oh my, what's happening? Like, I just couldn't understand. I was just spent all six episodes going, why is he saying, why is the dialogue like this? I mean, the animation and art style, sure, okay, great. It's not good.
No, animation and art style, yeah, they're not good.
I just remember also they trying to do the food making scenes, like, oh look, we're like Ghibli, Studio Ghibli, look at us. And there, and I couldn't tell if it was like, okay, are we taking the piss, like, oh look, we gotta do the food scene because we're anime, or they're really trying to make it look nice. And yeah, I just kind of end up, I hated every character. I don't like anyone there. So that's why I put it as hated, as opposed to boring. I don't think I was bored with anything on this year, personally.
Well, I guess this is my distinction for me. If I really, you know, dislike or hate something, then, you know, I'll actually continue to watch it just because it's at least interesting in that type of aspect, right? Mm-hmm. In that sort of respect. But if something's, like, boring, then I just want to turn it off and not really come back to it. And that's how I felt watching Neo Yokio, and that's also how I felt watching The Little Panda Fighter. Now, granted, neither forms of this media, as far as Neo Yokio and Little Panda Fighter, are they long? They're actually one of the shorter forms of content that we've covered, but oh my god, it felt like a century going through both of them, that's for sure.
No, I think the same thing for me personally with Little Panda Fighter is like I just wasn't bored because I just kept going, what? 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 What?
So hey, folks, if you want to check out the Little Panda Finder, please feel free to search on YouTube. Because who gives a fuck about the copyrights for that?
They didn't. Have you seen that movie? We did. We did watch it. They don't care about copyright.
It is fairly interesting that it ended with the pro tag not winning, because I thought they were going to do the whole generic, oh, hey, the pro tag trained really hard, so I guess he won. But no, he still gets his clock cleaned, which I thought was interesting. But the animation's shitty. The art style's shitty. It's like Windows XP or Windows 2000. Actually, a lot of the backgrounds look like the Windows 2000 desktop.
The music's great. They got the one motif.
Part of the reason why I didn't want to do this as a watch along is just because I know we attempted it. It was just too much, dude.
I was
like thinking to myself, I can't get fucking through this. I'm making this bad for myself and Ophi. That's why I was like, yeah, I can't do this anymore.
Okay, I remember. It's rough. It's not easy doing those.
Well, like, at least Ready to Rumble, you know, I thought that went pretty well. Sharknado, that was the shits because it's fucking Sharknado. And I think Little Panda Fighter is doing okay. You know. What I really love about this podcast is when we discuss things, it furthers my understanding on the subject matter. And I wasn't honestly sure between Neo Yokio and the Little Panda Fighter which would get the most boring for me. But now that I've discussed it, since I have the same feeling of apathy and possibly contempt for Little Panda Fighter when we did our live cast, which is since I had those same feelings as compared to Sharknado, I think the spotty for most boring feature that we covered is the Little Panda Fighter for me. Even with Yugi Moto as the main character.
Oh, yeah, he was great. Now, see, yeah, that's why I think I'm fine with like not having a boring thing, because if you listen to us for any amount of time, or, okay, depending on the episode, because if we both agree that something's good, it's good. A lot of these so bad, it's, you know, terrible things. I'm usually up for them, versus Jeff here, who's like, yeah, it's bad. just extract, and I was able to extract enjoyment. See, personally, if it was between those two, I'd rather watch Little Panda Fighter versus Neo Yokio, because at least like Little Panda Fighter is like not trying to hide the fact that they're shitting over something, whereas Neo Yokio is like ambiguous, like, oh, is this a comedy? Is this a satire? Are they making fun of the anime? Trying to pay homage? I don't know. Like, I'd rather...
It's not by much, but I think I was a little more entertained by Neo Yokio.
That's crazy. That's weird. I don't know how I feel.
But that's like me saying, oh, I grew a whole millimeter last year.
Progress is progress, you know.
Allegedly.
All right. Going to most surprising. I think he added this too, by the way. I don't think we had this category.
I thought it was a category I wanted to throw in, see your thoughts on it.
I know. I definitely think it can fit. And surprising. So, a lot of times whenever we do books, I feel like neither of us usually read much for pleasure nowadays. You know, ever since we got out of high school.
I never did.
And I used to actually be a big book reader, but that's why we did. Actually, we did review one of my favorite books as a child, and probably still now. I don't think children should be reading Jurassic Park. Yeah, adolescent. Well, it's Jurassic Park the novel, but I knew that was amazing. But what I wasn't so sure about, and I forget even why. I think you picked Siddhartha. I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to go with A. It needs to be short, so we could actually get a spot out of it, and then B. It was seen as a classical literature that's objectively, or rather, it's highly acclaimed. So I thought it'd be worth checking out.
And you know, sometimes, and I would say between the two books or three books, I guess, if I exclude Jurassic Park, because, you know, it's got a special place in my heart, between Siddhartha and Old Man at Sea, I'd say I'd prefer Siddhartha. I think it's just there were some really nice. It's very interesting because actually, it is not, despite it being like an Indian setting and characters. It's actually written by a German dude in the 1920s. It seems like something that would come from like ancient texts that passed down, you know. But no, it's just, and I think it's a very meaningful message, you know, trying to self-discovery. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, self-discovery bullshit. Like, oh, you gotta go find yourself. Gotta find myself in the woods. And that's kind of what happens.
I find myself, and then a lot of times those guys are just taking shrooms and getting lost at 2 a.m.
But yeah, and I think
it... Hey, bro, I'm finding myself. Don't judge my center, bro.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But no, I think it actually has a very... unfortunately. But anyway, we got a... Yeah, no, it's a story of self-discovery that I think, yeah, time and time again, I think the most important thing about Siddhartha to me is like, you're never fully figured out. You know, you're always discovering new things about yourself, and that's reflected in his journey. He's constantly questioning what he's known before. You know, is he correct? Was he correct making his choices? And, you know, even if he did make what some could perceive as mistakes, you know, wastes of time, it's all part of your journey. It's all part of making you who you are. And, you know, I think I was really, really able to latch on to its message and really enjoyed it. So.
No, I do think that is, you know, I think it's sometimes the message gets watered down when people put it on water bottles, or they'll put it with an obscure picture and they'll say, oh, I'm a work in progress. You know, like I'm always like the pseudo inspirational quotes that people sometimes put just to sell things. But reading this book, you really do see that sort of journey, because when he's what was the word for it?
Oh. He was part of those dudes.
When he was part of the culture, when they were fasting a lot and doing a lot of self-introspection, you know, they were saying that he's going to achieve enlightenment, you know. And, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what he's pursuing here in the book is enlightenment. But really how that gets defined changes on where he is in his journey. And I think that's actually really important, because maybe people's goals at one time in their life won't matter so much later down the line. And it does show, like Ophi said, that you're always developing, you're always changing. And he was at a high level for each aspect, or rather for each stage of his life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it could go. No, or I guess I'll... Yeah, no, when he was a Samana, I looked it up, it's right here. No, he was very well into that lifestyle, you know, grew to be a very wise man. And then when he met the woman, what was her name? Kamala.
I can't remember. Oh, yeah.
When he went to Kamala and learned how to be a trader, you know.
Oh, my God, was it Kamala?
I guess so.
It's just because the name Kamala.
Yeah.
You think of the wrestler Kamala.
Yeah, me neither. Huh. That's crazy. But yeah, when he became a trader, he became the best trader. But then he ran away from it. And then it kind of just became a ferryman. Like, he was living by the river, just was able to find fulfillment, find joy through that.
Even then, that aspect of his life changed when his son was leaving, mm-hmm. right? Because he learned to love, right? So it just goes to show that you're always in constant pursuit of quote-unquote enlightenment, or you'll never really know what your true end goal is going to be at the end of it.
Yeah.
I guess it's just being fluid is the most important part there.
Like a river.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. And surprising, you know, another Spider-Man. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. I think we've done enough explaining that one, I think. So... Get on and getting one to yours. Another one of my picks. Oh, wait, yeah, we actually have it kind of flipped. Yeah.
But if you had to pick, but for yours at least.
Oh, yeah. I was going to go to Siddhartha if I want to answer right now, but no, you can go for yours now.
Okay. So for me, the most surprisingly enjoyable spots of the year, I actually want to go through this in verse order. Velocipastor was really surprisingly enjoyable to me, because I remember a lot of people saying, like, oh, Velocipastor is a bad movie, such as Sharknado. And, oh my god, Sharknado was the shits. I didn't enjoy it. So I was thinking, I was going to this movie like, this is the shits. I'm not going to enjoy it. It's going to be boring. But no, this movie was... I think they had a 30,000, maybe it was
30. 40, yeah, we'll get it 35,000. Like, holy,
right in the middle. There you go. They had a $35,000 dollar budget, which is insane for a movie, right? But I think within that budget, they actually made it was almost like a web movie in a sense that the production wasn't high, and the story and the acting was cheesy, but still it had that. What's the word for it? That charm, you know, the charisma to it that made it enjoyable, that made you want to watch it. One of the opening, and you know, they're really good at establishing what kind of movie this is going to be, because I distinctly remember parts and bits from the introduction of that movie, especially when the car
blown up and his parents. VFX.
Yeah. Oh my god, VFX burning car. Like it's not an actual explosion. It's just a subtitle, essentially.
Yeah, no. You definitely agree. I think it took me by surprise too, like how good it was. And you know, as a lover of intentionally or unintentionally bad movies, Velocipastor is definitely a different take on that, because I think they were going for a more B movie, like intentionally B movie,
100%,
as opposed to that was B movie.
No, but because that was the constraints that they had, given the budget. But also, like, for a movie called Velocipastor, like, let's be honest, it's not going to be Good Will Hunting in any sense. So for the themes, or rather the genre that this movie was meant to be, I think it did it. It was a bad movie in the sense that the acting was cheesy, but it wasn't like I'm annoyed cheesy. It was like it's funny cheesy. The directing was cheesy. The plot... it was all comedic and endearing, whereas Sharknado, it wasn't endearing. It was just, it was sloppy, I think would be the
best. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, both were trying to intentionally be bad horror / thriller movies, but I guess Sharknado, you would think something like that, they have more comedy in it. Like, I feel like Velocipastor really has good comedic timing and moments. Sharknado is just like, hey, look, it's sharks, dude. It's sharks. Oh, it's so cool. It's so crazy. We're crazy.
It would do the shitty, like, oh, you're going to get hammered. Hammerhead fall. You know what I mean? It'd be stupid shit like that.
Yeah, very low effort. Low effort. I think that's the word. Versus, and Velocipastor definitely feels like a labor of love. Like, there's thought and care put into it, even though it's, you know, another, as I said before, objectively bad movie, but you can enjoy it plenty.
Shit, I kind of want to rewatch that one sometime. That one deserves a rewatch.
It was a good time.
But the other surprisingly enjoyable spot that we did this year was the SpongeBob musical for me. Because honestly, I was thinking it was going to be a, you know, a meme show, degenerate.
Oh, really? That's. Well, yeah, I guess so. That is kind of its legacy nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. But I didn't know it was on Broadway to begin with, so I didn't realize the production value that went into it. And also, you know, the first few seasons, the early seasons of SpongeBob are well written for both adults and kids, or rather for kids and surprisingly adults. But, you know, I wasn't sure the background of the musical. So when we finally got around to it, I was pleasantly surprised with how the progression of the story made sense, the depth. I kind of hate it when people say that, because I feel like they're just throwing out words to be ambiguous and not having to explain themselves. But no, I like how they added like layers to their characters, you know, like SpongeBob was sure in the cartoon, he's a goofball that dicks around a lot, but you know, he does like his friends. And although he annoys Squidward a lot, he does try to take care of him, AKA when he made him that eyelash sweater.
If you remember that. And then he made it. This one's made with my tears.
Yeah, like he's clearly a goofball character, but and although that is funny and entertaining, I think they add to that where in this musical, he's an unproven, he's only seen as minor league. He's not seen as the manager type material, right? He's just a quote unquote simple sponge, but through saving Bikini Bottom, he proves that he's more than just being a simple sponge. Not that there's anything wrong with that for him, but there's a lot more in his character that's available. He is available of higher standing.
Yeah, definitely. You can go. Because I was just going to say, I already said my piece about it, so.
Fair enough. And, yeah, no, like Opie mentioned earlier, a lot of the musical hits are hits. Like, goddamn. Just a simple sponge, I can hear it in my head right now. It's catchy, yeah, and it's entertaining, and it describes the character's emotions within that time.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to pick for my most surprisingly enjoyable spot of the year between these two, I'd pick. So this one's actually kind of a hard one, ooh, to be honest with you.
Are you gonna give SpongeBob the twofer, two in one night?
Oh man, it's definitely. I think this is the hardest one for me to pick because I think I enjoyed them both equally. But that's fair. I think I'm gonna have to give it to Velocipede.
Oh, there it is. No, I don't blame you. That's I think I was surprised by that one too. I mean, I think I'm in the same boat. SpongeBob surprised me of how good it really was. But no, Velocipede was like, oh, this is a gem. This is a hidden gem. So I don't think I've ever heard about it until you mentioned them. Like,
oh yeah, I saw it because someone I follow on Instagram was like, "Hey, if you like bad movies, you should check this out."
Oh, okay, yeah, no, definitely, definitely, it's great.
And I thought it'd be something you'd enjoy, you know, since we did the fucking Room and Sharknado.
And oh, I will say, I think ultimately I'd prefer the Room to Velocipaster. Because it's the special sauce of he's so artistic, every line of dialogue with care, everything. That's the secret sauce. It really is. He's a genius. And he's a sex god. He's a sex god. How many sex scenes he had? Like three, four, five?
Shots, I hate it.
Getting into her Bailey button. There you go. See, that's it. It's like I'm able to extract joy out of this, and all you just see red.
This podcast is over because if you're gonna put the fucking Room above Velocipaster, then there's not much I can say to you anymore.
All right, folks. Well, this has been the Spotter Pod 2 years. You know, I think we had a pretty good run, ending on episode 69. That's not a bad place to go.
Five listeners in our total runtime. 69 episodes. Nice. Good way to end.
Good way to end.
Opie's a piece of shit. If you ever see him, just even if he's on fire, don't spit on him. Let him fucking burn.
Let him burn with Mark. Jesus Christ. You feel very strongly about this.
He can't save you. Not if you say shit like that.
Okay.
But all right. Stupid bullshit gags aside, let's get into your most hated
spot of the year. We already talked fairly extensively about New York.
Let's get into why you really love Jaden Smith's hair color.
You know what? The thing is, like, I see it. The thing that really gets me is I see
character's name?
I don't care.
What's the main character?
Doesn't matter.
What's the main character's name?
Doesn't fucking matter. I don't give a shit. No, but what really gets me. Is seeing comments that are literally going, you guys are too stupid to understand the plot. Literally the Rick and Morty thing. To be fair, it requires a very high IQ to understand the concepts behind Neo-Yokio, and you're just a dumb anime fan who can't handle his genre being shit on.
You know what? I don't give a shit about being too stupid. If I'm stupid, then I definitely understand when I see bullshit. If you think Neil Yokio is a work of art, please come to my apartment and suck my asshole, because that ain't true. Because you're clearly used to eating shit.
So I think that's what really puts me over the top. It's like multiple times I scrolling through people who just like love Neil Yokio.
These people are just lying through their teeth, right?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I don't know.
On the internet, so it's hard to tell tone, but there's no way, dude.
That's what gets me. It's like, I'm sure there are people who actually believe that. Let's see. No, that's what I learned on the internet. There are always people who actually believe anything.
Yep, there are people that think the Earth is flat. So I guess I can't argue with you. It's actually, you know, dodecahedral, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, maybe we should do the Christmas episode. We should do it like after Christmas. That's the next.
So
there, or as in, you know. Next really episode. Oh, well, that's unfortunate. We're doing the Yo-Yo Christmas special.
Oh, fuck you.
Anyway, once again, this is our last episode, people. but yeah, now let's open up this special present here. That is the Super Parental Guardians. I know. I will say before you go into it, I think I don't hate it as much as you do. Like, as I, you know, I didn't put it on my hated. It's there. It's fine. I won't say fine. I mean, okay. If I compare it to the likes of like Batman and Robin, or what's another bad thing? I guess Neo Yokio, Lil Panda Fighter. I probably would put it like maybe just above Neo Yokio. Neo Yokio is pretty bad. No. Because how long is Super Parental Guardians again?
It's 2 hours.
How long is Neo Yokio?
It's like, okay, that's like 5 Neo Yokio
episodes. I know. I want those episodes. I want that time back, god damn it. Oh.
That season.
Anyway, but no, go on. Open.
All right.
Open fire.
Release the hound. But geez. No. So for those of you who didn't listen to that spot, I don't blame you, but we covered the Super Parental Guardians. It's on Netflix if you want to just reach your eyes for
or maybe
second.
Maybe they removed it, because that's what they do sometimes. I don't know.
That's what they should do, you're right. But it's a movie about where Sarah and Abati gets murdered for reasons. Fuck, I don't know, man. It was something stupid. She gets murdered, and then her gay best friend and her brother become impromptu step parents. The kids are shitty. Honestly, if they died, another movie that we saw this year where if they died, maybe the movie would have gone better.
That's a statement. That's a stance you could take.
You know, I think part of what makes me dislike this movie is I feel like with some more serious focused directing as far as trying to play up the slapstick bullshit gag comedy, I feel like there actually could have been a hearty story here, because the people who are acting do show acting chops as far as RC and I can't remember what the rat tail brother character's name was.
Oh, Paco, right?
Yeah, Paco, thank you. No, but they actually do have some serious acting moments, and that kind of shows me that I feel like they could have had a real story here where they cover becoming impromptu step-guardian parents and forming an unlikely but still loving family. But instead, we have an ending scene with Pokemon Go references, Train to Busan references, just a whole lot of bullshit. The police chief's wife is killing people for no reason that's explained, just because she says so, I guess. There's a lot of nonsense and bullshit that motivates this movie. And a lot of the characters aren't really endearing. You know, and God, it's so shitty.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, when, you know, I feel like there can be a place for nonsense, bullshit, and stories. You could argue Fooly Cooly is kind of like that. But you know what's the difference between Fooly Cooly and Super Parental Guardians? I don't fucking hate Naoya. That was his name, right?
Naota.
And Haruko. Haruka? What? Really? There's no way. I thought, because one's Haruko. Wait a minute. That's Haruko. There you go. Come on, man. I'm here. Cause like I think there's a right way to do weird bullshit. I don't know. It's
if anything, they look here. They set the quote-unquote rules and boundaries in that universe of weird shit happening, right? Of stuff coming out of people's heads and space people. Like, that happens in the universe. But for Super Parental Guardians, where it's set in the Philippines, it's meant to set on regular Earth, right? But why the fuck are there Pokeballs?
Oh, wait, trapped? we didn't even mention the best part of this movie. That it is, when it opened up, it became the highest grossing Filipino movie of all time.
I was just about to get to it.
Yep. Because, you know...
I think they got beat by...
some romance thing.
What's her name?
I don't know.
Bernardo. Catherine Bernardo, yeah. Okay. They got beaten by Catherine Bernardo movie. No, what made me upset... Like, honestly, aside from the movie being shitty, like, that's... I could have forgotten about it. But what made me upset was this... movie that honestly is the fucking shits. I know I keep saying that, and let me rephrase. For this movie with a nonsense plot, unlike multiple unlikable characters, or what else? Bad shooting and weird
bad directing.
Bad directing, but it wasn't even all that. What makes it worse is that people in our country really enjoyed this movie so much that it became one of the highest grossing
movies. Yeah, no, it's if you guys can't tell from a little thumbnail, we're both Filipino. So that's why we did this movie, because hey, Filipino pride. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you know being Filipino pride is like a thing that, you know, some people feel it more. Team. You know, it's a big thing for us in the
someone does.
America, but yeah, you know, it's kind of the crystallization of where we come from, or
it's where we come from. This was one of the highest grossing movies. Fantastic. But hey folks, thanks for joining us for another annual edition of the 2020, or rather another annual edition of the Spotty Awards. I'm Jeffrey Excellence. That's the Big O. But hey, we're not a weekly podcast, but we pretend to be. See you next time.
See ya.